If you were an Armstrong rat, you couldn't have your child inoculated against rabies, even if the child was bitten by a dog. No measles vaccination. You couldn't go to a conventional doctor. You could take natural juices and wine, but you couldn't take medicine, pills. The Armstrongites have buried a lot of their children. So here are the people. They're destitute. I know them. I've met many of them. Destitute. Sick. A lot of them had died. And here are the Armstrongs living the life of Riley. And when the Lord didn't come back in this 1969-1972 schedule for the battles and all this didn't work out, Armageddon, then there was a rebellion in the church from the top down. There was a split, and they're just now coming back from it. From the leader, many of the leaders left, and they said, "Look, we're starving, and look how you're living." And you see, when the pressure was off, and they saw that it wasn't the time, the end was not yet. Then there was a split a few years ago. And they took Garner's head off the radio and had a big flap, but they're back in business now. But the church forced them to ease up on some of their restrictions. For instance, he allows the people to go to the doctor now if you're weak in faith. He says, until you get strong enough in faith to trust Mr. Armstrong to heal you, you can go to a doctor. And they are letting the people join the PTA now. They couldn't before. Let them vote now, and they couldn't before if they want to. And they're taking off some of these restrictions. But they had to ease up. They were forced to. People were just forced to. They were just sick of it. Now, so after all this destruction is over, then you want to know what the wonderful world tomorrow is going to be like? You'll love this. This is the wonderful world of tomorrow. What will it be like? Well, I'll tell you what it's going to be like. You're going to have a world rule in which Jesus and Herbert are going to rule from Jerusalem. They have taken it back to Jerusalem for the rule. The local administrators, follow me, the leadership all over the world will be in their glorified bodies, the members of the Worldwide Church of God, Israel. They're going to be in charge. The officials will be as following. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will be under Jesus and Herbert in this as a sort of a ruling council for the whole world. Under them, Elijah will be in charge of worldwide religion. Why Elijah? One of the greatest of the prophets. Moses will be in charge of government. Why Moses? A great lawgiver, see? Theocracy. David and the apostles will be in charge of all of Israel, as all the Anglo-Saxons. You and I are going to be under David and the apostles. David, the great king of Israel. See, he'll take up where he left off and be the king of modern Israel. And the apostles, the Israelites, the head of the church, they'll be up there. The Gentile nations will be overseen by, this is on this book, overseen by Daniel and Paul. Why Daniel and Paul over the Gentiles? It was Daniel. The prophet to the Gentiles, see, Babylon. Who was Paul? The apostle to the Gentiles. See, they were just getting prepared for this. Internationally, Noah will be resurrected and put in charge of resegregating the races. See, all dispensational views are racist. He's a racist. He's going to resegregate all the races. Why would he put Noah in charge of resegregating the races? Father, you know, Shem, he can tell who belongs to Shem and who belongs to Ham and who belongs to Japheth. I had a revival meeting down in Jamaica in 1962, and I'll tell you, Noah's got his work cut out for him down there. He's big job. No, Job is going to be in charge of urban renewal. Now, why put Job in charge of urban renewal? Interestingly enough, you see, well, he explained, he just makes the passing statement, Job is going to be in charge of urban renewal because it was Job who built the great pyramid in Egypt. Didn't know that, did you? Well, see, here he betrays his connection with historic British Israelism, even though he denies it, because British Israelism has always been identified with another silly doctrine called pyramidology. And a part of pyramidology is the idea that Job built the Great Pyramid. And so when Armstrong says Job will be in charge of, see, the world's going to be in ruins, and Job's going to be in charge of rebuilding everything, it's because Job built the Great Pyramid. He's already in training for it. Well, this is... a British Israel magazine, not Armstrongite, the United States and Great Pyramid Prophecy. And here you can see how the Great Pyramid, if you diagram it and follow the different angles and measurements, it will give you the historic, the prophetic history of the world. Now, how many of you ever heard of pyramidology? Yeah. Well, I think of all the silly things that are taught in the world, in the name of God, that's got to be one of the top three. It's pyramidology. Well, very quickly, as I said, as far as the Seventh-day Adventists, they go to the Seventh-day Adventists one step further. They not only keep the law and the dietary restrictions, they keep the Passover, the Feast of Tabernacles. They own or lease resort areas, recreation areas, where every two or three times a year their members go for the Passover, the Feast of Tabernacles, and they got instructions on how to do this. In the early days, an Armstrongite could not wear clothing of mixed fabric, you know, like synthetic and natural fabric, because the law of Moses said not to mix fabrics in the clothing. They followed the law of Moses very faithfully. As I said, they go to church on Saturday, not Sunday. The Holy Spirit's an impersonal force, like Jehovah's Witnesses. Deny the immortal spirit, very racist. We've talked about the Armstrongites are very. And by the way, when I say Armstrong was against medicine and doctors, he wasn't kidding. He let his own wife die. Herbert let his own wife die rather than call a doctor. She had a blocked bowel, and rather than a very simple operation would have saved her life, but he stood by and let her die rather than call a doctor. So he's not kidding. See, Armstrong is responsible for the deaths of a lot of people. This fellow you hear on the radio, this Garner Ted Armstrong, this articulate, glib, intelligent man, is very close to being a murderer. It's very close. Many think that he is a murderer, you know, by their doctrines. And a lot of innocent children have died in the Armstrong House because of he would not permit them to take them to the doctor. I suspect they themselves go to doctors. I think, you know, Catherine Kuhlman went to the doctor, or she got sick, so did Mary Baker Eddy. Anyway, they're against tobacco and drugs. Drinking is okay. Up where I came from, their weekly gatherings or their picnics were drunken feasts. Now, that's not true everywhere, but Armstrong, if you're an Armstrongite, you can drink. You can't smoke or use drugs. Any questions? Yes, sir.
What would be the point that they didn't want you to take medication? Was afterlife very, would it be an honor to die so that you can look forward to this time and maybe, you
know, well, I don't know. They would not permit medication in the early days, up to just till this last split, where they were forced to ease up on some of these things. By the way, let me say this before I get back to your question. A few of the statements that I make as far as their policy and this resume of Armstrong is not quite accurate. They were accurate when the book came out, but this book came out just before this split, and they've had to ease up on some of these. So some of them are not quite, two or three of them are not quite accurate now, but they were accurate for then. And this is one of the main ones. Well, they would, I don't know what the answer to your question. I do know that they would not permit any kind of regular medical care other than like nutrition. For instance, no inoculations, no aspirin, no drugs, you know, no synthetic medicines of any kind, no regular orthodox medical care. Now, what did you want to...
Was that because they knew that their afterlife was...
No, it was because they were to depend upon Mr. Armstrong to heal them. As if you were sick, you got faith, you don't call the doctor, you write us a letter and send us some money, and Mr. Armstrong would heal you. He didn't heal his own wife, but... Yes, ma'am.
I've read that one of the problems of modern day Jews waiting for the Messiah, that none of them can trace their ancestors back to David because the records are destroyed. So how did British Israel connect
to David? Well, that's a very good question. It's an interesting point. Nobody can establish their racial identity today except some of the black races, but not very many of them. Some of the tribal groups in Africa still have what you would call a pure racial strain. Nobody else does. Well, the Eskimos, maybe, you know, some really located, localized tribal groups. For instance, there's no such thing as a Jewish race. There never has been such a thing as a Jewish race. Not in the genetic sense. For instance, when they came out of Egypt, the law provided how the Egyptians would be incorporated into the Jewish theocracy, you know, those that came with them. And there's the black Falasha Jews, for instance, trace themselves all the way back to Solomon. And they may be right. Haile Selassie in Ethiopia claims to be a direct descendant of David. One of his titles is, or was, before he was overthrown, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. You go to Israel today, and you say, well, it doesn't look Jewish. You go to Israel today and try to see who looks. So what we normally associate with the Jewish race is the Mediterranean Jew. See. But, you see, what does a Jew look like? Well, he's olive-skinned, and, you know, the aquiline nose, and elongated skull. No, he isn't. That's the Mediterranean strain, or mainly Italian. Go to Israel today, you find white people, black people, blonde-headed people, every racial characteristic. There's never been a race, not a pure race. Neither is the Anglo-Saxon race is not pure, and the Teutonic race is not pure. No such thing. People talk about the white race. There isn't any such thing as a white race. You see, all race is a particular group of genetic characteristics that become dominant through intermarriage within a restricted group. Now, so these dominant characteristics may be the color of the skin, maybe the color of the eyes, maybe the texture of the hair, maybe the height, like the Japanese, you know, maybe the average height. It may be the shape of the skull, color of the skin. You see, we identify race with the color of skin. That's just one of many factors. And so when groups tend to intermarry within a basic confined unit, certain characteristics become dominant. They become more black than white, and their hair, and they become more short than tall, or more tall than short. But as soon as they marry out of this group, those characteristics aren't dominant anymore, and these dominant racial characteristics are not dominant anymore. And so what we have called a race is gone. It's only one race. It's a human race, by the way. And I was interesting. My wife and I went to Grand Canyon a few years ago, and this beautiful vista, you know. And I'm standing there, and this a couple of fellows from Japan were a couple of tourists, and they were obviously having a good time. They're obviously tourists. They didn't speak a word of English. You could tell they were from Japan. And one of them was taking a picture of the other one against the background of Grand Canyon, you know. And I thought I'd be polite, and I stepped out of the way so I wouldn't be in their picture. You're going to show the folks back home. And this little Japanese fellow, stepped over next to me. I thought, they wanted to get this particular scene, so I stepped over here out of the way, you know? And he stepped over again. Finally, I realized what he wanted. He didn't want a picture of Grand Canyon. He wanted a picture of his friend standing next to me. They could show, look at this American I saw over there, so tall, you know? And here he stood about like this, you know? And I told my wife, I said, how's that for having a good-looking husband? Here he had Grand Canyon looking at him in the face, and all he wanted was a picture of me. But anyway, so that's true. You see, now there are some still dominant racial characteristics. That is, white is still a dominant racial characteristic in most people, in most Americans. I'm not preaching for or against intermarriage. I'm simply talking about what race is from a genetic standpoint. That's what you say is true, though. That is, Judaism is not a race, it's a culture. And it's a varied culture. Under Judaism, there's a broad range of lifestyles, a broad range of beliefs, a broad range of traditions under the title of Judaism. Any other questions? Yes, sir. That's an excellent question. Number one, cults don't collapse. For instance, what's going to happen unless the Lord comes back? And then it's going to collapse. But the Lord doesn't come back. What's going to happen is that Herbert's going to die. I firmly believe in his mortality. And it's going to upset the apple cart, because when he dies without the Lord coming back, what will happen is the same thing has happened to all the other cults. I'm not a prophet, nor the son of a prophet. I'm just looking at it from a historical viewpoint and judging the probabilities. What will probably happen is that it will be radically changed in form. It will have at least one major split. Each of these splits will change in form. That is, they'll make major revisions in their doctrine. They'll mark time for a while, and then in this new shape or new form, which I have no idea what it will be, they will go right on. It's what the Mormons did. Joe Smith died. They had a split. They were shuffling. They went on. Jehovah's Witness, when Russell and Rutherford died, they split and reshaped their doctrines and then went on. So on the basis of this, this is the basis of my answer to you. Theoretically, they should go down the drain if he dies without the Lord coming back. But they don't. It doesn't work that way. That's what makes it a cult. Logic has very little to do with it. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Well, that was a part of the split. See, what happened was, he was doing this all along. The church leaders knew that he was doing it, and there was a lot of these abuses. See, this split was not over doctrine. It was over these moral abuses and financial abuses. You see, the money he was gambling at Las Vegas and the money that Herbert W. was spending on his jet planes was the third tithe, the Widows and Orphans Fund. Well, these leaders knew that he was doing this, but you see, they honestly believed that you know, this Armageddon, these series of wars, and the return of the Lord was at hand. Around 1969, 1970, 1970 would all be over by 1972. And by 1975, the wonderful world tomorrow would be set up, hence his book, The 1975 Prophecy. But you see, when it became, and so they didn't say anything about it. Why? Well, you know, that's not important. If you got the Lord coming back tomorrow, the end of all things is over, you know, day after tomorrow, you don't talk about little things. Well, when they saw that it wasn't going to happen, the pressure was off. And then they raised this objection. You see, one of the problems was that a fellow called Stanley Rader. Stanley Rader is a man who's an attorney, and he's the financial genius behind Armstrong. He is always at Armstrong's elbow. If you ever see a picture of Herbert W. Armstrong, most of the time you'll see a picture of Stanley Rader. He's the chief economic advisor of the Worldwide Church of God. He manages the dollars. He's Herbert's financial counselor. He's not a member of the Worldwide Church of God. And this is one of the objections. So when this pressure came on, one of the things they said, you're going to have to do, or we're leaving, some of them he did, some he didn't do, and some left, was you got to straighten up, you know, this and that. And Stanley Rader's got to be baptized. We can't have the power behind the throne, not even a member of the church. And so he submitted to baptism, but it was just to keep everybody happy, to help heal the wound. But he doesn't believe it, never has. He's why Herbert is one of the richest men in the country. But this was all before. So they've changed some of their policies. For instance, now they will announce in some cities they'll announce their meeting. Put an ad in the paper or in the phone, the yellow pages, Worldwide Church of God meets here. They still won't put a sign up. Before it was secret meetings. So they're a little less, but not in doctrine. They have many changes in doctrine, just in some of their policies. Yes, ma'am. They baptize, interestingly, by immersion for the remission of sins, interestingly enough. Now, of course, their doctrine of salvation is haywire. Pardon? No, Holy Spirit's an impersonal force. Not actually. They do believe if you're not baptized by one of their ordained ministers, you're not baptized. Pardon? Yes. But you're not baptized to save your soul from hell because they don't believe in hell. See, they don't worry too much. The reason they don't knock on your door, they're Calvinists. They say that the elect will emerge. You see, the elect will read these papers and then gradually ask for somebody to come, and they'll kind of surface. And so they won't ever come and knock on your door and ask you. But they're not worried about it because, you see, if you don't cooperate, if you don't believe them now, then in the wonderful world tomorrow, the Lord will resurrect you, and you'll learn better the second time around. So you get another chance. So have no fear. If Armstrong's right and we're wrong, we get another try. See?
Why don't the followers of our campaign renew a history
Well, it's interesting. There are cults rewrite their own history. Every one of them does this. And, of course, so you have the real version and you have the official version, the official one of the church. Well, obviously, the people who are in this cult believe the official version, or they wouldn't be in it. And so we're going to talk about this. This is really important, for instance, in talking about the Jehovah's Witnesses. If you really want to waste your time, I mean really waste your time, you talk to a Jehovah's Witness about Charles Taze Russell and Joseph Rutherford and their history. First place, they've been taught a whole different version of history. They've been told that you've been told a bunch of lies about their history. So you're saying what you're saying is not true. So you just waste your time. It's pretty much with them. These people are pretty wild-eyed. You see, that they're taught by, they're propagandized thoroughly. Now, you see, if people don't know how to handle things, we look at these people who are in these cults and say, how can they be so silly? See, we need to be careful. We don't realize the kind of approach that's made to these people. What's your first name? Donna? Dot? Donna, let me ask you a question. Are you a Christian? Now, we're just playing a game now. I'm not going to embarrass you. Maybe not. You're a Christian, right? You follow Jesus, don't you? And you believe, don't you, that we ought to do what Jesus did, don't you? Don't you think we ought to do what Jesus did? Did Jesus go to church on Sunday or Saturday? Did Jesus worship on the Sunday or the Sabbath? Did Jesus ever say that we're not going to keep the Sabbath anymore? No. Not in the Gospels. I thought you said you followed Jesus. See, that's pretty tricky, isn't it? See? That's how they get people, that kind of approach. For instance, well, you know, we ought to do what Jesus did, and Jesus kept the Sabbath. He also kept the animal sacrifice. They don't kill sheep. He also died on the cross. We don't do that either. But anyway, you see, they get these people in. Most people, I say this in all love, but most people, and I think this includes many people in our churches, that their love for the Bible is exceeded only by their ignorance of it. They love the Bible. It's a great place to keep grandma's pictures and to press flowers. Looks good on the coffee table. Wouldn't think of having a home without a Bible in it. We read it during every Thanksgiving service. We'll defend it. We'll die for it. We'll get mad if somebody wants any version but the King James Version, which we haven't read. We'll do anything but read it. Nah, I'm just kidding. Not much. But this is the kind of people he wins, you see. People who have just a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of dedication. So your question is, I didn't mean to make light of your question is a very good question. And so it's hard. In other words, why can't they see this, you see? Well, they don't. This is not what they're made to see. They're manipulated. Their minds are manipulated in kind of this way. And well, yes, sir.
What is your view on Armageddon?
Well, my view of Armageddon, Battle of Armageddon in the Revelation 13. Well, just since you asked, I think Armageddon is clearly the picture of the struggle between paganism and Christianity. The book of Revelation was written at a period when the gospel was almost when the threat was that Rome was going to stamp out the gospel. Rome was going to eradicate the church. Jesus had promised that his kingdom would spread through the whole world. Rome said, we are now going to kill it right here. And they were doing a pretty good job of it. They were killing, for instance, Revelation 20, the millennium chapter, talks about the heads, the spirits of those who were beheaded for the testimony of Jesus, the first century martyrs under Roman persecution. And the basic theme of the book of Revelation is, number one, that the gospel is not going to lose, it's going to win. And this tremendous battle to the death against old Greco-Roman paganism. Two, and this is where Revelation 20 comes in, those who have died in this struggle are with the Lord. They're alive, and they're going to share in the ultimate victory of the church. Under this first heading, You have the struggle between paganism and Christianity pictured in cycles. The same basic message presented in graphic language in very different ways. And so, generally speaking, just without going into much detail, I think the Battle of Armageddon is one portrayal, not the only one, but one of the portrayals in the book of Revelation, which talks about, in symbolic language, obviously symbolic language, the terrible struggle to the death. By death I mean not pagans dying, but Christians dying. But it was a great battle between paganism and Christianity. Who would win? And of course, the church did win. Jesus won. It's interesting, for instance, in the Battle of Armageddon, Jesus comes in and he wins with the sword that comes out of his mouth. See, the spoken word. And this kind of thing. The Bible says that when Jesus comes back, no one's going to know anything about it. Paul said to the Thessalonians, there's no need for me to write to you about the day of the times or the seasons. Why? We all know. He's already said he didn't know. Let me ask you a question. You see, everybody goes to the Bible and finds signs for the return of Jesus. Well, how could Jesus give signs for his return if he didn't know when he was coming back? Thus said, the signs that are given, see, what he says in Matthew 24 is, you will know when the Romans are going to come to destroy Jerusalem by these signs, earthquakes in various places and rumors of wars and so forth. And you see the enemy coming, let he who's on the housetop not come down. If you're in the field, don't go back for your cloak. Run, because they're going to lay siege to the city, and on. But, in contrast, about verse 36, of that day and hour knows no man. When he comes, it'll come like a thief in the night. If they don't have any idea. And he said, even he said, no one knows. The Father knows, the angels don't, but the angels don't know, and I don't know. That's pretty clear. It is to me, anyway. And when the Lord comes back, what's he going to do? Peter says very clearly, the day of the Lord will come in which he, or the earth being on fire, shall be destroyed, and the universe, the elements, shall melt with fervent heat. Everything's going to be destroyed. Very clear. That's what's going to happen when the Lord comes back. Well, any other questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah, a few years ago, I heard him talk. He talked a lot about cosmonauts and UFOs.
I'm sorry. Would you say it again?
Yeah, a few years ago, I heard him talk on TV and radio. He talked a lot about cosmonauts and UFOs. How does that fit into his religion?
I think he would view this as signs in the heaven. Jesus said, talk about signs in the heaven on the earth below. And not talking about the second, this is Matthew 24 as well, I think. But I think that's how he would classify it. Other than that, I don't know.
I mean, he
did?
Yeah.
Armstrong did?
Yeah.
It's news to me.
Well,
I'll tell you the truth. I'm not really up to date on the latest things Armstrong is doing. I know a whole lot more about it now than I'm interested in. I got into this thing writing that little book, and I wrote that little book just to get it off my mind, not because I really cared about it. So I'm free, so my answer is I just don't know. I haven't been following him recently. I quit getting the plain truth. He quit sending it because I didn't send him any money, even though for my free subscription. And so I'm not going to send him a nickel, of course, but I didn't want to read it anyway. I just get mad. So cults are not my big thing. It may sound strange, you invite me here to teach on cults, but that's not really what I like to do. I'm enjoying myself this weekend because your preachers feed me so well. But other than that, I'm really not up to date on it. So I just have to plead ignorance to your question. I wish I did know the answer to that. It sounds interesting.
What do you enjoy?
Preaching.
Revival.
Yeah. I'd rather preach a revival than give a clinic. I am enjoying being with. Don't misunderstand me. I'm enjoying this. I'm having a good time. And in fact, if I wasn't here, I'd be in Orlando, Florida, swimming in my backyard pool right now. About 85 degrees. I'd much rather be here in the rain. And yes, sir. I'm sorry. No, they celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles and the Feast of Passover. I don't think they celebrate the Feast of Lights as such. And they may have a minor celebration I don't know about. But I don't believe so. Yes, ma'am.
Did you read
I'm sorry, would you?
Do they speak in tongues?
Armstrongites?
I was told I did.
So, not as far as I know. I would say no, unless they just started recently. Anyone else? Oh, we. Well, this is the, we have the Jehovah's, they teach what the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Seventh-day Adventists teach. That's soul sleeping. That man is not a dichotomous creature, that is body and spirit, or a trichotomous creature, body, soul, and spirit. But man is simply a monistic character, one. He's just man. Therefore, there is no conscious existence of anything after death. The vitality, they might say the animal vitality might go back to God. They say this because the Bible says the spirit returns to God who gave it. You know, the body goes to the grave and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Oh, they say that's just, you know, the vital element in man, but it's not conscious. Therefore, when we die, we won't know anything until God raises us up. Yes. You follow me? But between now and then, you're unconscious, soul sleeping. You follow me? There's no conscious part of man that survives in a conscious state, the death of the body. When the body dies, then you're unconscious, asleep. Anyone else? Well, you probably know more than you ever wanted to know about Armstrongism, too. That's all I had to say. No more questions. You think we pretty well covered the ground? There are 1,000 other details, but I think we have touched on the main points to give you a pretty good idea what it's like. Very vicious. It's a very vicious cult. It's created split a lot of homes, created a lot of insanity, mental illness. You can see why. Yes.
Do they partake of the Lord's Supper?
Yes. But the only Lord's Supper they partake of is the Passover, once a year. That's their Lord's Supper. They don't kill an animal. They keep the Passover, they don't kill an animal. They like Jesus did. They just have the Lord's Supper, the loaf and the wine.
Which gospel
will
you be discussing today?
I'm sorry.
Which gospel will you be discussing today?
Today and tomorrow. I'm glad you asked. Been wondering the same thing myself. Tonight we're going to talk about Mormonism. A couple of Mormon preachers called the Parsonies. Mormon elders said they might come tonight. Be interesting. Hope they don't convert us. The reason I hope they don't convert us is I love coffee. In the morning, during the Bible school, I'm going to talk about Jehovah's Witnesses. Tomorrow afternoon, Seventh-day Adventism and faith healing. I'll try to get those two in one session. And then tomorrow night, a potpourri. That is, we're going to sort of do a survey of the minor cults, like Moonism. It's kind of just a brief survey of the number of smaller cults. I'm handling the bigger cults in depth and the minor cults in survey. Anyone else? Well, it's 15 minutes. I hate to quit early. It's against my religion, but I guess we will. Preacher?